classic car on the corner, still calling my name, so it seems. But I can't afford you, so I'll just ignore you and drive you in my dreams. I'll drive you in my dreams. Drive you in my dreams.
Yep.
Welcome to another episode of the Classic Car Corner podcast. I'm your co-host Jason Painter, along with Eric Benzel, and we welcome Mr. John Pampu. John is a longtime automotive enthusiast who has had a very rewarding career in the auto industry. He serves as an automotive coach to enthusiasts around the nation, and his successful career in the insurance industry with his commitment to his clients have deemed John a highly respected automotive maven. John, it is great to have you here this evening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me on. I appreciate both you and Eric taking the time to hear me spew.
Absolutely. And you know, it's always fun, obviously, talking shop with fellow enthusiasts. So, obviously, one of our first questions would be, obviously, let's start with your background and where your love for cars actually began.
Wow. That's a great question. My father, who was born and raised in Dearborn, Michigan, mm-hmm. his father back in the early 50s had a Kaiser Frazier dealership.
Oh, wow.
And as you know, that they weren't too popular, and they kind of went defunct after a few years.
Right.
But he was an auto mechanic in Dearborn, right on Michigan Avenue there.
Okay.
And worked on a lot of the cars for the local, let's say, groups in the Detroit area during Prohibition.
Okay.
And he's quite the handyman and had quite the reputation. He didn't speak a lick of English, but but he knew how to work on cars.
Gotcha.
So, you know, at an early age, my father, you know, he introduced us into all sorts of cool cars. He was a high school teacher, principal,
mm-hmm.
But he showed appreciation. He liked lines and design. He was actually a wooden tool die model maker for Ford,
mm-hmm.
In between colleges.
Nice.
And, yeah, so he liked design and lines, and as I went through high school and college, and I saw all the cool people driving cool cars with pretty girls in them, I was like, hard not to fall in love with
right.
cars.
Exactly, right? No mm-hmm. doubt. Yeah, that's a great point, for sure. So so you propel up the ladder here, and then you start a career. Is your first career start with Hagerty, or is it with I know you had some other ventures going on.
Sure.
How was the you were a vice president of sales marketing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So back in the day, well, I grew up with McKeel Hagerty in junior high and high school. And my wife actually went to elementary school with McKeel in the small community in Traverse City, Michigan, out on the old Mission Peninsula.
Gotcha.
And I after trying to find myself in California with my cousins in Huntington Beach, I decided I better get real and try to find a job. So
gotcha.
Packed up my $20 and moved back to Traverse City and started working construction. And then I was headhunted by a small little insurance company called Hagerty Insurance, and they were looking for their first outside salesperson.
Uh-huh. Gotcha. Yes, sir. And what year was this, John?
This was 1996.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
And so McKeel was out east finishing up school, and Kim Hagerty interviewed me and Louise Hagerty interviewed me. And they said, hey, you know, what do you think about insurance? And I literally looked at Louise, who I love just mm-hmm. tremendously. And I said, Louise, I hate insurance. I don't know anybody that does.
Right.
And she said, John, that's an honest opinion. And she said, well, do you like cars? And I looked at Kim and I said, well, who doesn't?
Right.
And she said, you're our guy. We need you. And I'm like, holy cow.
That was easy.
I was their first salesperson and went into marketing and eventually climbed up the ladder over 10 years. And we grew a very small book of business into a tremendous book of business.
Yep.
I became vice president of, like I said, marketing and sales mm-hmm. and got to work with some really cool people like Craig Jackson, Rob Myers.
Gotcha.
All the guys, man, and travel all over this great world and country, see some of the finest collections and cars in the world.
How rewarding is that, right?
And for my gosh, I dream about it.
Yeah.
And for our listeners out there, if there's a little TV show that comes on every so many times a year called the Barrett Jackson.
Yep.
And that's Craig Jackson of the Barrett Jackson.
Ah, gotcha. Yep. Yep.
Yes. That, yep.
Very good.
And that thing, it's amazing because I know you guys have been a part of the car community for a while, but mm-hmm. to watch the progression and the evolution of Barrett Jackson when it was way out in Scottsdale near mm-hmm. Chauncey's farm and it was in the middle of a dust bowl mm-hmm. and now it's just blown up. It's so cool to see.
That's awesome.
So now what are you currently doing now as it pertains to classic car insurance?
Okay, great question again. Okay, after raising seven children, I got the we got the last one out of the house this spring, so we are empty nesters. So right now, and I've been dabbling with insurance, you know, commercially for the past few years on and off, but I really can't get away from the classic automobile industry. Not only are the cars cool and just exceptional pieces of art, it's the people.
It is. I really love
the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you see somebody driving a Firebird, you know what type of person they are. If they're driving a T-Bird, whatever it is,
right.
I just love it. I'm fascinated with the behaviors and the personalities and the story. So I decided to get back into it, and I wanted to see if I could make another go at becoming a classic automobile insurance agent to my former customers and hopefully potentially new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down to Amelia Island and went to the RM auction.
Okay. Yep.
And holy cow. It was like I was running through the tunnel at the University of Michigan during a football game because the energy was exceptional and the amount of cars were, I mean, the dollars value were insane.
Right.
And just to see that again is so refreshing. And I got to tell you a quick story. Back in December, I went to the RM auction in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I really made the decision to really get back into what I'm doing and traveling around again is in Miami. Rob Myers put together an auction in a parking structure. In 3 hours, he sold $42 million worth of cars.
Holy cow. Wow.
Yes.
That's insane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. $42
million.
So, can you imagine
that? A small crowd, but huge interest and mm-hmm. tons of energy. So it's kind of, it's good to be back. And so basically what I'm doing is I have a little agency that I partnered up with a gentleman out of New Orleans that I used to mm-hmm. work with at Hagerty Insurance.
Okay.
It's
yep.
called Mart International out of New Orleans.
Okay.
Great guy. You want to talk about a smart insurance weenie as well as a car nerd?
Yep.
Just class act. Good guy to have on my team.
Well,
I'm
there
so
you.
Pleased.
Well, and for clarity here, John, I mean, are you licensed to be anybody's agent throughout the U.S. or is it just in the South Carolina range?
No, I'm an independent agent.
Okay.
And we are licensed in all 48
in all
states.
Okay. Well, see, there you have
yep.
it. I did not know that. So that's good to
yeah.
know. All right. And I know yep. we got a lot of questions to ask you because you're so full of good stories and things here. So we're going to jump around just a tad bit. And obviously
sure.
we prelated you to this question prior to hitting that record button. But tell us who your grandmother babysat as a kid. Yeah.
You got it. Well, as I said, my father was, we're from the Dearborn area, which is mm-hmm. right outside of Detroit. It's a big melting pot for a lot of the Eastern Bloc and the Middle Eastern descent
mm-hmm.
of people, folks that came over. So my dad grew up in a place called Salina, Michigan in Dearborn. And my grandmother, Efrosina Pampu,
okay.
befriended a woman by the name of, it was Mrs. DeLorean.
Yeah. Nice.
And,
yes.
Yes.
Wow.
And she babysat John, who was 7 years younger than my father, older than my father. And so my grandmother took care of John DeLorean, and my dad had a playmate, and we went to grade school together for a while. And then when the DeLoreans moved out to Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
California in 1942, that was to visit my family, who actually just left Traverse City, Michigan here. They live in Huntington Beach now. But,
okay.
yeah. So Mr. DeLorean John Sr. was not, I guess, a very good man, let's just say. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I got you. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, and she was trying to find a safe haven for her family. So
gotcha.
My grandmother assisted in that.
That is wild. That is fantastic. Now, I do have a question. Did your grandmother ever tell you any stories about how when she would go to pick him up, he would raise both arms up slowly outward?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
Yes.
Hence the wing
doors.
She
said he was doing that at 3 years old.
Oh, that's awesome. Hence the
There's
wing
always
doors.
An origin to where these things, the genesis of these ideas.
Exactly. And you know, and honestly, I mean, John DeLorean, I've read a lot about him, and what a fascinating career path that gentleman led as well.
Yeah.
And and of course, you've probably been seeing all the new DeLoreans that are being populated, I think, maybe even on an electric standpoint. But that's another day, another dollar. We'll talk about that
some
other time. So tell us some of the people. I know you mentioned some just a few minutes ago, but some of the people you have met in the auto industry that you've just absolutely really enjoyed. Because, you know, obviously, Eric, John, and I, talking to people like yourself, and all the other guests that we've had on this show. It's just so rewarding to be able to talk to other enthusiasts and the people that they know. So
besides talking to the two of us, who else have graced your experience?
Aside from you two guys?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, besides us.
I'm telling you, making the hair of my arms stand up.
Nice, right.
I understand.
But truly, I have been so blessed. See, when you get to know me, I'm one of those guys that if I will talk to anybody. There's no such thing as a stranger to John Pampu, and I absolutely love that. And I don't care who you are, what trophy you won, what award you won. I don't care. So my biggest goal and accomplishment, I would say, and there's a few people, but I wanted to meet Jay Leno because I heard so much about him. Mm-hmm. And this was my first year there. So I kind of made my way out to Pebble Beach. And I walked up to Jay and I introduced myself and I said, I owe it to myself to meet you. I don't want a picture. I don't want anything. He's like, really? You don't want a picture? I'm like, no, sir, I don't. He's like, well, I want a picture with you.
There you go. Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I know. So he took my Haggerty hat off of my head and put it on his head. And he took a picture with Louise Haggerty and I, and it was a great marketing piece. So we got to use it, and we eventually insured him.
Is that right?
And I'm telling you, he is the nicest, smartest, one of the nicest people that I've met.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
Just a kind and gives you the time of day.
Right. Isn't that cool? So, okay. Yeah. So you got to meet Jay. That's fantastic. Yeah.
He's on our bucket get a talk to him list.
Yeah.
But he's on everybody's automotive bucket. Grail, unicorn. Let's talk to Jay for a minute.
Yeah, if you're on a first name basis with Jay, John, just let us know. We'll send him a private message there. So,
I got to tell you, I went to this. I got invited to a party up in Holiday Hills, and I had a guy, a gentleman by the name of David Sidorek. He's a huge racer, and Jay Leno was there with a few other guys from Chrysler. And Jay did this. There's like 20 people there, and he did this monologue for 15 minutes. And just for privately, and he was just grabbing a beer out of the refrigerator, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
That's so cool.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Just light on his feet, smart, just really cool to be around.
That's awesome.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, as a father of seven.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I'm sure you're getting, your wife's throwing something at you right now. Out of respect or out of admiration. Yes, I know we have seven.
You guys. Yes.
Have you passed on that automotive passion to any of your kids? And we ask that because we'll talk about the generational differences between when we went out to get our driver's license and when the kids today go out and get their driver's license.
It's true.
Yeah. It is. And so my father-in-law has been a supplier to General Motors for about 55 years. Mm-hmm. So the kids, our family, we have grown up with a few collectible cars in the barn, let's just say. Mm-hmm. So we have exposed them to that and the smell of nitrous and all that. So they are, and I can't say the boys are different from the girls because, the two of the three girls that we have are right up there with the boys as far as the interest in finding cars really cool.
Beautiful.
What we would do when we were little, we have a 68 Firebird convertible, and we would load the kids in it, and they call it the ice cream car.
There you go.
So,
right.
Yep. So they're right in it. And I don't know where my kids got the personality from, but they're like, hey, Dad, I really like what you do. You get to walk around and talk to some cool people and look at really fast cars. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. So we have some interest, and we actually did a quick little trip to Italy last month and went to the Mille Miglia and exposed them to that. And I thought my daughter was going to cry. It was just... She saw Bugattis and Buccialis and Ferraris and things of that nature. So, they got the bug.
Fantastic. And as a girl dad, it means even more to have girls that are interested in the cars and the history in them and just that get it.
Yep. I agree.
That get it.
Yep. That's right.
I love seeing it.
Yep. Me too.
And that's fantastic because I don't know, we've probably experienced some kids that are not necessarily just Gen X, but the younger generation that – I mean, when it was time to get your driver's license, you knew exactly what time the place opened up. You were first in line, got that driver's license, and you were ready for freedom.
Yep.
Yes, you could smell that pink, you got that pink card and the copy, and you could smell your first in line.
Right.
And you wanted to be in a car. See, that's the thing. And when you were a youth, when you were young, your goal was to drive.
Yes.
Yep.
Because why? It gave you freedom. Mm-hmm. Liberty, and made you cool. And like I said, so my first car, the 68 Firebird convertible that I bought, the coolest guy in my high school football team when I was a little kid was a quarterback, and he had hair like Flash Gordon. And he literally had a blonde in a bikini driving around in it. And I'm like,
poor guy.
That's me. I feel sorry for him. I want that.
Yeah, right. Yes. Exactly. No doubt.
rough life.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. So yeah, car, it's just, you know, cars, there's no life without a car.
Absolutely. And nowadays, we've talked with other kids that are younger, and we ask them, are you eager to get your driver's license? And sometimes, like, I'm getting whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's an interesting point in observation, because when you get into a car, it's a responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a risk.
Yep, that's right.
So now what we're seeing are, this generation doesn't like to take too much risk, even if it's like getting in a car. And it's very common for kids nowadays not to get their license on the very first day of their 16th birthday. Yeah. I think that's they're missing out.
It's offensive.
That's right.
It's repugnant.
And a bunch of other things we can't say on air, right?
Right. No doubt.
Well,
unless we're going on Joe Rogan.
Exactly. Then we can. Yeah, exactly. I get you there. Well, I know you've underscored many times your passion to help people, and you're such a people person. We can tell by your enthusiasm and everything over the airways here. What have you found in your time in the automotive industry to be the most rewarding part of your automotive career?
Ask that question.
Yeah. What would be the most rewarding part of your whole tenure of career in your career? What's been the most rewarding experience you've had?
Well, you know, the simple answer to that question are the people.
Yeah.
But I'll boil it down and just say, you know, I've had so many damn good mentors.
I got you.
I mean, from Louise Haggerty, mm-hmm. you know, just sitting and just seeping knowledge, Frank Haggerty.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, I have a really close friend by the name of Bruce Knox, and okay. he has a dealership, a Ferrari dealership in Texas, and a couple other things. But he was a major player in bringing Formula One racing to the North American continent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Nice.
And he started eBay Motors and was with Cruise International. He's out of Indiana, but he's a year older than me, and okay. he has been not only a good friend, a great friend, but a hell of a mentor.
I see.
And,
gotcha.
And see, I was never good at sitting in classes and learning. Mm-hmm. I learned from people.
I got you. Right. Yeah.
These are my classrooms. These shows and car mm-hmm. shows and auctions. This is a classroom, and I learned a hell of a lot. It's very blessed.
There you go. And we're going to talk about a show here in just a second. But Eric has a question for you, I think, at this point.
Yes.
Well, what would you give as advice to a brand new first time classic car buyer?
I would say, make sure you have a friend that knows classic cars.
Yeah. How to work on them.
You really want it. But make sure you know what you're buying, mm-hmm. and and know the fundamentals. Whether it's number matching, if you're gonna look at a Mustang, go grab the rear quarter panel and check if there's any mud or dope underneath it. But educate yourself.
Yeah,
that's what you should do. It doesn't take a lot, mm-hmm. but it takes a little to really be taken advantage of. And we've seen it, you know, as we insured cars and stuff. And I hate to tell you, it's not a $100,000 car. It's really a $50,000.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
That guy kind of goes in. What would you specifically tell them not to do? how much time do we have?
Is this a hot mic? Yeah. I would say if you're a first time buyer, make sure, I can't say it. Okay, make sure you go to an auction with a buddy.
Okay, gotcha.
No, you know what I mean? I think that a lot of people get really, you know, enthused about going to an auction. There's a lot of energy, like I've spoke about before, because it is. And you get into a competition. All it takes is another person to get interested in the car, and all of a sudden the value of the car goes up.
Right.
So. Yeah. Understand the market and the reality. Be a realist, because what you think is a $10,000 car might not be, or vice versa.
bring a conscience with you to say,
yes,
hey, Jason,
don't do it.
That 84 Honda Civic is not worth that. Stop. Stop. Right. Let it go. We'll get the next one.
There you go. All right. So, John, tell us about who you met at the AACA Museum you helped sponsor for their 75th anniversary.
Who I met?
Yes.
Mark Lieberman.
Okay. Was there a Tucker? Am I thinking right here? Because I was reviewing this on the internet. Okay.
So. So Mark Tucker. Or excuse me, Mark Tucker. Mark Lieberman is a collector out of Detroit.
Yes.
He has nostalgia, and he is absolutely brilliant. But he has this obsession with Tuckers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's collected them over a few years. And when I was at Amelia Island, he was the first person I ran into.
Nice.
And he's like, John, where have you been? Blah, blah, blah. We started catching up. And he told me what he was doing and working with the Tucker Group again. And,
yep.
And you know, it was spectacular. You haven't seen so many Tuckers all in one spot, one place. And the turnout was great. And the reception, of course. I mean, it's an oddball car.
It is.
Ahead of its time, of course.
Right.
But yeah, it was very exciting and great to see, and we're going to continue on with that.
That's awesome.
See if we can grow it.
There you go. Now, rumor had it, I believe, was Cynthia. Was her name Cynthia, the granddaughter of Preston Tucker? Was she there or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Cynthia was there.
Did you get to meet her too, or no?
I did. I did.
And that's so cool. Right.
Very cool. And it's like, I mean, you're touching part of automotive
history.
Yeah,
of course.
Design and wonderful and just and with a name like Tucker or the design like Tucker and the story like Tucker, right. It's always going to be around forever.
Yeah, no,
it's like Jimmy Hoffa.
Right, exactly. And you know, I think we all know that it was a very limited production car, and it was one that I think it was the first car that had the idea that when you turned left, the one of the middle headlight would turn left. Yeah. So it was just, just as John said, it was ahead of its time. But weren't there like 1,800 of those things made? Or I forget. I just remember that they're.
You ready?
Yeah.
50.
Oh, there's 50 of them made. That's it?
50.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw one.
And actually,
there's
a rumor that I think it's in Colombia or Brazil where the government has one and it's being used as a taxi.
No kidding. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is the most expensive.
So there weren't very many of them made, and there's not many in existence today. Marx has his hands on. I know he's had on 7 of them in the past, but he's quite the dude, and it was quite the event.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. Well, cool. No, I was just curious about that experience. That sounds fun.
Yep. Really cool. It's a blast.
Now, growing up in the '70s, like we did, on the Cars Yeah podcast with Mark Green, you mentioned a 78 Pontiac Trans Am Bandit Edition.
I know.
Yes, you do.
Have you owned a car like that at some point in time? Something like it? Exactly like it?
No. No, and I know it's kind of like a stinker, but I really loved Burt Reynolds, and he looked good in it. So I thought it's a badass car.
Right.
But,
yep.
Oh, man. But no, The closest thing we had is I have a 67 289 with a dual quad barrel dealer option with 2,400 miles on it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, that'll throw your organs back a little bit.
I got you, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the 68 muscles. We have a Corvette here or there, but it's I haven't gotten into the 70s too much, but like I said, I would like to get my hands on one of those Trans Ams, but there might be one or two ahead of that.
And they're bringing some pretty pennies right now.
And
I think, was his a 77 or 78, Burt Reynolds? I want to see.
78.
Okay. 78. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, wait, you could not, I'm not, I believe it was a 78, but.
Okay. Yeah, no, we know it's of that genre.
That's right. The black and gold.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
Now, did they make a white version of that with a blue trim?
Later in 79, though, right? Or did they have it?
In 79, but that was the first color of the TA was the white with the blue trim.
Okay.
I think that was 69.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Perfect.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Now, what era? I think you just kind of kind of leaned into that a little bit. What, so you're more interested in the muscle era, or is there any other areas that you're interested into, like the MR2, the CRX era? I mean, what flips your switches there?
Okay, I'm going to tell you I love that. My favorite car, I will save up to, I'll sell some of my kids to buy it, is a 1953 Packard Caribbean.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yep. Yes. You
that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Just a home run. And then we can go into the Cadillac, Baritzes, Eldorado Baritzes of the same year, the 54. I really like the 54 Darren, the Kaiser Darren, with the panel doors. Oh, God, that's a beautiful car. But the 64 Lincoln Continental convertible with the suicide doors.
Right. Yep.
That's my car.
Gotcha.
I like that car.
So you're a gross vehicle weight rating enthusiast of 7,000 pounds or greater, it sounds like. Yeah, there you go. I'm almost there with you. I had a 68 Lincoln Suicide Continental, but it was a hard top, but still, nonetheless, it was suicide door.
Baby
it was,
blue.
Yeah, it was so light blue, it almost looked white, but if you got up to it, there was definitely some hint of blue blue tint in it for sure. So
very cool.
Yes. Well, John, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I own a company called Mobile Auto Appraisal Group, and I'm an auto appraiser, and I'll go out to folks' house for estate and or, sometimes banks send me out for loan to value, and sometimes insurance companies send me out for proper insurance valuations. Being that you're in the insurance industry, I know this answer, but, coming from you, obviously, as a licensed agent, tell our audience about the benefits of stated value versus a generic auto policy value.
Well, it's great. Well, I'll start with this. There's actual cash value, which is pretty much your daily driving car,
mm-hmm.
With drive school to work, et cetera. Then there's stated value.
Right.
And stated value is different from agreed value. Stated value will pay up to, where an agreed value, which these classic car insurance companies such as Hagerty, Grundy, J.C. Taylor, and others have something called the agreed value. And I'm just going to use round numbers. Let's say, Jason, you and I, there's a 1964 and a half Mustang. Mm-hmm. You own it. You say it's worth $50,000. I come to an appraisal group, and the appraisal group, they say, yes, $50,000. Or I just know the car. I see pictures of the car. I say, oh, yeah, it's $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
You and I agree upon that value. So once we agree upon that, or I agree upon it, I start insuring it, it is covered for $50,000, the value, no argument.
Right.
Long story short, if that car gets totaled or stolen, if it gets stolen, my wife is probably yelling at me.
It's stolen.
It's stolen.
Try with you.
That insurance company cuts you a check for $50,000, no argument, because you agreed upon the value of time, the conception of the policy.
Right.
So it removes all of the haggling away.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was to give somebody some advice is, take the time, do the due diligence. You're going to save a boatload of money, and you're going to have better coverage.
Yeah.
And there's competition out there, folks. There's not only one sheriff in town. There's many out there.
Yep.
And what you want service with a fair price. And I'm going to tell you that with a agreed value policy, it's a win-win situation.
Gotcha. Yep. And I totally I get that, because I'm out looking at these cars all the time, just making sure that opinion based on facts, obviously, as we all know. But it's a very rewarding job to be able to go out and meet fellow enthusiasts that have the Pontiac GTOs and the first gen 64 and a half Mustangs,
with Monzas.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, exactly. Some of the odd one-off stuff. That's for
Gremlin
sure.
Gremlin fleet.
Yeah.
So okay, here's an interesting question, and I don't know if you've been posed this or not, but now with the hype of the AI stuff, how do you think the AI will affect, if any, the classic car industry and or insurance industry as a whole going forward, John? What's your opinion on that?
I think in the insurance industry, it's going to be more applicable initially, just because there's some cookie cutter questions, and you can basically, it's about profiling. Everybody wants to know your driving record and things of that nature. So it's going to be that side will help.
I got you. Okay.
I think it'll be automated. It'll be leaner, but what's going to be absent, which I'm a proponent of because of who I am, mm-hmm. is that you're not going to have that personal contact.
Right.
You're not going to have that human touch and feel, you know, mm-hmm. and there's two camps. Yeah. You don't really need it because I just want to get on and move on. Well, what I noticed about a lot of these guys that own cars, they want to tell you the story about the car because it's important to them. And if we lose that human touch, then we're not going to be, you know, successful. Exactly. You know, we're going to drive ourselves out of business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, for as far as buying cars, yeah, you know, they could probably pick up on some of the flaws of the car or whatever. But, you know, doesn't that kind of take away the sex appeal of purchasing a car or going out on a date? It's like, well, yeah. Hey, you know what? I want to see it firsthand. And that's why I argued with my friend Bruce Knox about eBay Motors. I'm like, nobody's going to buy a damn car online, for a little that I know. Because you want to kick it. You want to smell it. You want right. to be in it. You want to, sure. you know what I mean? So
absolutely.
I think it's going to, you know, you'll have some reward coming from the AI in that aspect. But mm-hmm. I know people are still going to want to, you know, go to these events, take a look at these cars, have an old guard tell them the story about the car.
Yep.
Because AI can, they're going to be, it's like an encyclopedia, but they have the personality isn't going to be applied, even though it's going to be a fake personality. It's not going to be a real personality. Sure. So I think that's what's going to be the biggest element that's missed.
No yep. passion. There's yeah. no passion.
Passion, no passion, man. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. How does a robot, how can you program something to be passionate?
Yeah.
It's good fake.
Question. Yep.
It's fake. Mm. So,
now, speaking about passion, which
yes.
Do you belong to any car clubs? Do you do any traveling with any of them, or do you have any interaction with car clubs?
Well, I do. I belong to the CCCA and the AACA, and I have been absent from the market pretty much for about 15 years. I had this thing. I had to raise these stupid seven kids, I guess. And I didn't want to travel so much, but no, you know, I'll join a few others. But as far as going to events, I'm going to hit them all. I'm going to do the circuit. I'm going to go see Dana Meekham again, and I want to get out to Pebble Beach and see those cars. But really, I don't know if you know Tim McGrain up at M1 Concours in Detroit. He kind of helps with the Woodward Dream Cruise, and he's okay, got a yeah. really cool thing going. He was a general manager for a few of the auction companies and then worked real strong with Pebble Beach. His wife is involved at Pebble Beach, Cindy, lovely lady. But yeah, so I'm going to get up there and I'll go to the Woodward Dream Cruise and start getting back in, immersing myself back into the industry go. and right. taking the wife with me on occasion. So
there you go. That's been, right.
Yeah. Yep.
I was a participant.
And so my kids, they got to pay me back for that, for those freaking educations.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly right. Yeah, the Woodward's yeah. coming up, I believe. Is it not? Is it next month or September? Is that?
It's in August. Oh, so it's the middle of August.
So it's next month. Yeah, yeah. So I participated one time in that. That was about 10 years ago when my kids were younger. And it was an absolute blast. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. So it's fun
Good.
To see all those cars for sure. So,
yep.
Me, you.
I'll ask.
Okay, go ahead.
Would you like to share some of your stable? What you got in there?
Ooh, okay, yeah. We have, okay, so I have the 68 Firebird.
Okay.
Convertible.
Yep.
Love it.
I took the 350 out. I crated that for numbers matching and put a 400 in. So that's my favorite right now.
Nice.
Then we have the 67 Mustang yep. with 2,400 miles on it. That's a screamer.
Wow. Gotcha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We have a 57 Corvette.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry?
No.
I just sighed. I sighed. I feigned a little bit backwards going, huh?
That's awesome.
A 53 GMC pickup truck, a 54 Ford pickup truck.
Okay.
And then a 54 Buick Skylark convertible.
Oh, beautiful. Nice. And yeah, yet again, gross vehicle weight ratings about 7,000 or greater.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Well, you got to create the motor and the Firebird because you got seven kids riding it.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need the horsepower to get it going up a hill.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
So true. Yeah. So true.
That's right.
It's kind of like the old Volkswagen Scirocco commercial. When they added the 16 valve, they said, now you can have as much fun going up hills mm-hmm. as you did going down them.
Exactly. Brilliant.
Yep.
So, I love it. No, that's
so
right.
You got to put 400 horsepower in, otherwise you can't. You're going right, to get man. The ice cream's going to melt.
Yeah, exactly.
that's my story.
And we don't want to melt in the punter.
The ice cream's going to melt.
Exactly. No doubt.
Can you say something? Look at these disappointed guys behind here.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. All right. So here we go. What's your prediction of classic car values as time continues on, John?
Well, I think, you know, as history has showed, they're only going to continue to appreciate.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I
you know, it's our industry. You know, I'm 55 years old, and you know, muscle cars are continuing to go through the roof. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you see some changing of the guard and what's collectible or what's perceived as collectible because, you know, the Model A's aren't as interesting to guys our age and maybe a little younger. So those are kind of, you know, feathering away. But I only see it appreciating as long as people take care of them and they invest. And I think it's personally it's a great investment.
I do,
if
too.
You buy right.
Yep.
I really do.
Yep. I agree.
And I guess there's one thing to tell any classic car owner or anybody that has one, don't garage clean it. You got to turn the engine on. Those belts will crack and wear out on you if they stay in the same position.
Yep.
You got to run
those
things.
Seals are gone. I'm telling you, yeah, and I unfortunately learned the hard way when I first moved down to Charleston. I didn't run my car, and holy cow, thank goodness I had some guys that, you know, Ryan Remington actually helped me out find a place to take my car to and repair it. But, yeah you got to. And that's the thing is there's a gentleman by the name of Harold LeMay. He had a huge collection. Well, you know the LeMay collection.
Yeah, up in Washington, right? Oregon?
Yeah.
Yep.
In Washington State. And we insured his collection. And what he did, I think it was twice a year, is for sure once. But he would invite the community out. And anybody that had a good driving record could drive a classic car around the oval just to run it.
Isn't that brilliant?
And he had a few thousand cars.
and then he invites the food trucks out, and then he takes a little bit of the capital from getting everybody.
Yeah.
I love it. That's awesome.
Capital.
Yeah, that's right. I love it. Yeah. That is so fun. How about that?
Corvette always said, our cars are meant to be driven. When they moved the plant to Kentucky, they actually said, I mean, and this is just maybe just folklore, but they said Kentucky has every type of road that these cars are going to see, from potholes, rough roads, twisty roads, hills, highways. They're going to see them here.
Yep.
Drive them.
Yep.
Because if you don't drive them, the suspension doesn't articulate. Things get stiff.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's
right on point. I agree 100%.
Now, are there any specific cars out there that would be like the top five list of? This is an investment for early retirement. But saying that, I mean, I guess it's a two-parter. One would be for early retirement, but I guess then the other one would be, which one should I get into now? So I could do early retirement because if I could do the ones on list A, I could probably already retire. The list B is hang on to this for 10 years and then you can retire.
There you go.
Yeah.
A story in two parts.
I would say, you know, if I was to get in it right now, and all depends on the budget that you had and how many kids you had in the house and in college, of course. But I would say I would jump right into like the lack of better terms, like the trucks or the SUVs, the Broncos, the Blazer, although they're just blowing up as far as value goes right now. I'm actually I have a customer that's looking for one. He was looking for a 70 and I couldn't find anything. I mean, this car was absolutely beautiful for $250,000.
Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a Bronco, folks?
Yeah, right.
A Bronco.
Exactly. Yep. First gen Broncos.
So,
the air conditioning's not going to work. You're going to slide the switch over
and it's going to blow hot still. All right.
Exactly. That's extra.
You're going to hear the hiss of nothing. Nothing.
Yep.
So do you have any of these on your bucket list? Any cars?
I do.
Okay, what are they?
I do. Well, I'm looking for a Scout. I like an early 70s Scout.
Okay, yep.
Harvester, International. And then, like I said, I want that Continental and then
gotcha. Yeah.
And then I guess my last one would be that. I'll get the Firebird hopefully soon. But I want that 53 Packard Caribbean.
Ah, gotcha. Oh, wow. Right. Yeah. I know Packard. I know the brand, but I'm off to look up the Caribbean and see exactly what you're talking about here in just a few minutes.
It's sexy.
I imagine it is. Yeah, absolutely, for sure, for sure.
So what we're saying is, don't avoid Italian cars, or German cars, or British cars.
Right. Yes.
But get a car.
Yeah, right.
There you go. Get any car you possibly can. Don't avoid. Get to your personality. Buy your personality in the car.
There you go.
Now, is there anyone you'd like to give a shout out to today?
Yeah. Bruce Knox in Austin, Texas.
All right.
He's my boy. He's a good buddy of mine, and I'm going to hook up with him here. Hopefully come down to Charleston. I can take he and his son redfish fishing. So, hey, Bruce, hang in there. Go sell some Ferraris.
There you go. And I think he might be a contender on this show if he'd be willing to come on. So please know that. We'd love to have him. For sure.
I will definitely mention it to him. And he'd be a joy to have on.
There
He's
you go.
He's a good dude.
Yep. All right, now here's your gotcha question, and I'm not going to steal Eric's thunder.
Okay.
So, Eric, this is the same. Well, go ahead, Eric.
Well, it's a question that I've asked everybody that's been on our show, from Wayne Carini, Mario, Andretti, and that is, when you went to take your driver's test, what car did you take your driver's test in?
It was a brown Dodge Duster.
Oh my gosh!
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know.
That's but like, there's two times I've had this. I've said that, and I'm like, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So
but I'm sorry.
Let me tell you, it moved a little bit.
Well,
it had
sure.
some guts.
So some of those cars actually had a 340.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if they ever had a 440. They may have had a 440 in one of those dusters. I think a lot of them had the 225 slant six, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. Do you remember the year? Roughly?
I do not.
Obviously, late 60s, early 70s. I don't know if dusters were made in 60s. Definitely 70s. I know that for a fact. Yeah.
Yeah. I took my driver's class. I want to say it was 82. So, it was an older car.
I'll be dang.
Okay. Yeah, it was fun.
It's so cool. So cool.
Well, and just that's really, I mean, it is cool. I mean, if you didn't take your driver's test,
he's our first duster.
That's our first duster. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm honored.
There you go. Yeah, right.
Exactly. We have not had a Maverick yet.
Yeah.
a Maverick.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We have not had one of those. But a little side thing about us, the three of us that do the show here, we have all at one point in time have owned a 1984 Oldsmobile Delta 88.
Yep.
No way.
All three versions of it. Our co-host John, he had the two-door coupe with the moonroof. I had the four-door sedan with the white Landau top. And Jason still has the station wagon with the third row seat facing backwards and the factory AM/FM
CB radio. Yep,
that's exactly radio.
CB radio.
Yep. So you, yeah,
oh
yeah,
my god.
Yep, yeah, yep. Yeah. And it's factory. It is absolutely factory. Everything about it.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah. A lot of fun. We obviously get, you know, well, I'm 50 years old, so we get all of our age group people, and then of course that was the cars that we were driving back in the 80s, and so everybody, you know, especially for the people who are in the back facing out the opposite way,
right.
Now it's a little awkward to you know, wait or whatever, but they have fun, we all have fun, and it's what they're meant for, so that's for darn sure.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Good.
Well, John, what a pleasure having you this
Likewise.
Evening. And sincerely, we wish you all the much continued
Thanks,
success
brother.
With everything you got going on. Where can people reach you? Where can they contact you? I know you're on Instagram, I think, and I've seen a couple of websites for you. Where can they reach out to you?
Okay, I'm on Facebook, Instagram. My website is jvictorpampu@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Perfect. Well, thank you to all our listeners for tuning into the Classic Car Corner podcast and happy motoring. We'll see you next time and have a great day.
One hand on the wheel, pedal to the floor, quarter mile suits my style, give me just a little bit more. River up on red, cut her loose on car on the corner, Lord, you make me cry. Wish you would let me be, instead you taunt me every time I walk by. Old classic car on the corner, still calling my name so it seems, but I can't fool you, so I'll just ignore you and drive you in my dreams. I'll drive you in my dreams. Drive you.